Baseball is back, and we're going to break it all down for you here on Diamonds in the Desert. I'm Haley Stasiak with Jordan Hamm. And Jordan, baseball has not been boring in this first week.
No, it hasn't. There's been plenty of walk-offs, plenty of late-inning heroics. It almost feels like there's a playoff atmosphere here week one, which is always exciting because we know how long of a season it can be. The fact that it gets off with a bang is just huge.
The Diamondbacks are 6-1 coming into this week's road trip to California. It's the best start in baseball, and that is not a joke, folks. That is true. And coming into this week's series in San Francisco, and then they'll head to L.A. to play the Dodgers over the weekend, what have we seen with this first week that has made kind of like a turnaround from last season?
Well, I think last year things got off to such a bad start where they were basically out of it within the first 2 or 3 weeks, that the fact that A, they're competitive, and B, they're winning early, that's huge. And you know, going back to the offseason, they really didn't make that many deals. That they didn't bring in those big signees. They didn't make the big trades. They brought in Taijuan Walker. I think that's a nice addition. They brought in Fernando Rodney to help shore up the bullpen. And they basically brought in a couple of role guys on the infield and behind the plate. But at the end of the day, they didn't get those big stars. And at the winter meetings, Mike Hazen said that he was happy with where this lineup was and that last year just a lot went wrong when you have A.J. Pollock out virtually the last spring training game before the season starts, and then you have David Peralta in and out of the lineup. That meant that you then had to move Chris Owings to center field. That was a new position for him, and you know, the pitching didn't go off as planned. So there were so many injuries and just so many bad breaks for the Diamondbacks that now they kind of have a cohesive unit here, and you have Jake Lamb, who is just starting the year off great. Brandon Drury, those are two guys that I've really, you know, over the past year have seen develop, and they're off to a great start as well.
You mentioned that there weren't any big stars brought in, but they did bring in a new manager, mm-hmm. Torey Lovullo. And personally, I think that's a game changer for this team. We've sat in those post-game press conferences, and Lovullo has really preached the family aspect and how the makeup of the clubhouse has really changed and these guys have gotten closer. So how do you think that may benefit them in the long run?
Well, I think the fresh start was necessary. It was, even though I think Chip Hale might have gotten the raw end of the deal there, I think it was smart to clear house and bring in Mike Hazen, who got rave reviews from anyone that I talked to when he was over at Boston. Same thing with Torey Lovullo. And Lovullo kind of got a little glimpse of what it is to be a manager when he was the interim manager when John Farrell was out battling cancer. So I thought that was a nice little snapshot for him to see what it was like and that sort of thing. And everything's going right for him right now. You know, he'll bring in Jeremy Hazelbaker, and Hazelbaker, more often than not, will get a hit. And we saw yesterday he is actually human and he can make an out. But starting the year 6-for-7 and just making these plays, and it seems like all the players are buying in right now. And when you have that instant result of wins, they can only build off of that.
The month of April is going to be spent playing in the division. You've got the Dodgers, the Padres, the Giants, and the Rockies. How do you think, or I guess, what do you think their biggest challenge is going to be in this month?
Well, this isn't an easy division in baseball. You look at the Giants, and what we had talked about so much in our posts and in our stories and that sort of thing was the Diamondbacks pitchers, specifically the starting pitchers, all of their starts were kind of fist fights. That's how Lovullo describes Zach Greinke's in opening day, and I thought that was fitting for all of them. The Giants make tough outs, and they've been there before. The Dodgers have been there before, so those are the two teams you're gunning for. And then you look at a team like Colorado, who has Trevor Story and Nolan Arenado and DJ LeMahieu and, you know, Carlos Gonzalez, just such a great offensive lineup, and then you have a guy like John Gray who's heading up that staff. That's another team on the rise. And then you also have a few playmakers on the Padres. They're, you know, they might be towards the bottom of the division, but a Hunter Renfroe, he's a really good player and that sort of thing. So this isn't an easy division, and going on the road is going to be an early test, specifically when you're going to San Francisco and you're going to Los Angeles.
Especially after the fight San Francisco put up in that opening series as well. Wasn't exactly expected for the Diamondbacks to come out,
right?
They did.
Yeah, and you know, the Diamondbacks escaped with 3 wins. I think, definitely, realistically, everyone would have been happy with 2 wins, but the fact that they were able to get 3 and, you know, have those comebacks, and the Giants spent all that money on Mark Melancon, opening day, he blows that save. It felt like the rest of the series, the Giants were kind of on their heels a little bit, mm-hmm. and it was something that I don't think the Diamondbacks fans were expecting, but the fact that they did, obviously the Snakes faithful are very excited about that.
You mentioned the fist fights that the rotation kind of had to go through in their first starts. It seems as though, at least with Greinke's second start and Corbin's second start, that they're settling down a bit. Greinke and Corbin both had impressive second outings.
Yeah, they really did. And one of the things that Lovello said after Shelby Miller's first start, where first two innings he gave up three runs, then shut down the Indians and had 10 straight batters retired, he said that you don't realize how jittery these guys are and how antsy they are to get on the field and have that first start. So specifically the guys in the back of the rotation, they're sitting through those 3 days where all their teammates are getting to play and then they aren't. So I think that they're starting to settle down a little bit. They're starting to find their groove a little bit. We'll see how Taijuan Walker does over the rest of the season. But as this progresses, obviously you're going to see, you know, a guy like Brandon Drury. He's not going to hit 500 the rest of the year. They're going to regress to the means. But the fact that there are, I think, definitive roles on this team is really important. And the fact that Jake Lamb is now sandwiched between two right-handed hitters in a run-scoring position, like, he's leading the team with 7 RBIs. Mm-hmm. Brandon Drury is at second base. They said from the get-go he is going to be the second baseman. He's not going to bounce around. That's helping him focus, get a jump on their young seasons so that they can hopefully have this kind of roll out for the rest of the year.
Switching gears a little bit to a general look at Major League Baseball, what has surprised you most in this first week?
Two teams in the American League, Minnesota Twins, 6-1. And the 1-6 Seattle Mariners. The Mariners, you know, the Diamondback fans know them well. They just got Gene Segura for Taijuan Walker and Ketel Marte. They aren't off to a good start. When you have Kyle Seager and Nelson Cruz hitting under 150, like, that's going to be indicative of how your season's going to go. And then on the other side, the Twins, it's all about pitching. It's kind of like those teams from the early 2000s that seem to get to so many ALDS series and then just get knocked out by the Yankees. But leading the way is Irvin Santana and Phil Hughes. Those are two guys that have had 3 combined starts. Phil Hughes is going to start his second one here shortly. But it's all about pitching and defense for the Twins. That's another kind of up in the air division. You know, you don't know how Kansas City's going to be. You know, the White Sox are an interesting team because they got a plethora of prospects from Chris Sale and from Adam Eaton trades. So it seems like they're building for the future, but there's a lot of talent there still, so you could see them make some noise and that sort of thing. The Tigers have been kind of all over the place the past couple of years, and then you have the Indians who are
I'm still waiting for them to show up.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think the fact that they played such a long postseason,
right,
and they were in it till the end, and you know Kipnis is hurt now, mm-hmm. there might be a hangover from that. There very well could
good
be.
Way to put it.
What's your biggest surprise?
For me, it was really the Indians kind of just not being the team we saw, like you said, in the postseason. And I think hangover is a pretty good way to describe it because I was expecting big hitters and pitching that was unflappable, just on pitching. Didn't see that against the Diamondbacks. And yeah, Diamondbacks are off to a good start, but I was expecting a little bit more from that series.
Right. It seemed like they kind of ran into a buzzsaw. And Edwin Encarnacion hasn't really clicked yet. You know, Corey Kluber looked human.
Yeah.
You know, and he has, we've come to know him to be on this sort of tear. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Frankie Lindors are there, and all the pieces seem to be there on paper, but for whatever reason, much like kind of the Diamondbacks, I don't want to put that, you know, kiss of death on the Indians week in, but that's kind of the vibe I'm getting where it's like, there's so much talent on the field. Why isn't this coming together?
I like your analogy there of a hangover, though. I think that works very well for that.
Got to get them some Pedialyte.
I was just going to say that. Switching gears again now to the collegiate level. Jordan, we've talked about this, it seems, since the start of the season in February. Oregon State, they cannot be stopped. They have the best ERA in Division I baseball at a 1.81. They have 2 pitchers that are in the top 10 nationally. And probably the most surprising to me for that is that left-hander Jake Mulholland, he's a freshman. Let that kind of soak in as I tell you the stat. He is currently has an ERA at 0.59. And then they also have a junior lefty, Luke Heimlich, with a 0.77. And it's just mind-blowing.
See, you read those off to me before we started recording, and I thought it was, like, 5 point and 7 point. And I'm like, okay, who, like, why? That doesn't sound right. And then you're like, oh no, it's half a run and three quarters of a run per nine innings. Like, that's unbelievable. They have three guys. They're the top three lowest ERAs in the conference with Mulholland, Heimlich, and Jake Thompson. Like that,
they literally cannot be stopped.
Right, and this is going to be some groundbreaking analysis. But when the other team can't score, you're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah. 23 straight, to be exact.
Yeah, and they're up near the top in terms of batting average. They can get on base. There's a reason that they only have one loss.
And you mentioned batting average. They have a standout at the plate in Nick Madrigal. He's been at .392 with 11 doubles, 3 home runs, and 19 RBIs. He's their standout on the offense. But these numbers, you just can't get over these numbers. 23 straight, they've lost one game this season, and that was at the end of February. So they've gone this entire month into April with wins. Are they going to lose? Will they lose?
It's one of those things where I'm sure right now in Corvallis, they're just thinking like, please just get us to, like, the last 2 weeks of Pac-12 play, because it's kind of like tinker, like, everything's going right. Okay, what's going to go wrong? Who's going to get that, you know, elbow soreness? Or who, you know, it's just kind of like you have all the pieces together, just not at the right time. Mm-hmm. And you're just hoping that it all stays and continues to flow until, you know, the regionals start.
Well, you mentioned falling apart. The team that I thought was going to make them fall apart was Arizona, who has the third best batting average in the nation at .328. And when they played Arizona, I was thinking, okay, this is going to shake things up with Oregon State a little bit. They were just coming off of a sweep of Arizona State, who we'll get into that later, isn't doing so hot at all in the pack and non-conference. But yeah, I thought it was really going to be Arizona that was going to shake things up for them.
They didn't.
And they didn't, no.
No, they got swept, and this is a very good Arizona team, and they looked pretty average against the elite.
Exactly. And I would say, I mean, since that series, Arizona has looked exceptional, but they've had those games where they look average.
And every team's going to have that. Oregon State just hasn't yet.
This is true. Except for that one game in February.
That one game against Ohio State when there was probably still snow on the ground in Columbus.
This is true. So we talk about Arizona having the third best batting average. That's due in part to junior infielder J.J. Matijevic, He's batting at .395, and he leads the team with 20 doubles and 6 home runs. And also, along with him, is Jared Oliva. They're tied for 38 RBIs, and Oliva has 15 doubles, 2 triples, and 4 home runs. And these two are Arizona's big hitters. They're right there just whacking that ball, really.
They're definitely leading the way, but this is the team that the top 6 run scorers in the conference are in Tucson right now. Like, this just reminds me of the Andy Lopez-led team that went to the College World Series just a few years ago. I remember watching them very closely, and there's no breaks in the lineup. You know, and that they have very good pitching, but that takes a ton of pressure off the pitching, where they can just, you know, hey, if I give up 3 runs, like, we're probably still going to win. Yeah, like, going in with that mindset, like, obviously they have guys that can certainly go the distance and shut people down, but knowing that you don't have to do that is huge when you step on the rubber.
Well, you mentioned those other guys. Cal Stevenson, Alfonso Rivas, and Nick Quintana are all guys that have stepped up as well recently, too. Matijevic, though, going back around to that, he was named Pac-12 Player of the Week this past week after going 9-for-16 with 7 extra base hits against Washington State. It's a group effort there, but Matijevic is just a standout.
Well, yeah. What was it? 9-for-16?
9-for-16.
And 7 of those were for extra bases.
Yeah.
How do you stop that?
Oregon State knew how, but
they did. But like that's just incredible. Like, and you see that in college baseball sometimes, where these guys just become unconscious at the plate, where just they're finding gaps.
But it comes in spurts with a lot of guys. With Mijatovic, it's been consistent. And that's what's most impressive is that it hasn't been here and there. Yeah, he had a good game here. Not so good game the next game. No, it's been pretty consistent between him and all of us. They're team leaders up there.
Yeah, for sure. And this is a very good team. And I don't think you can discount how important it is to have a College World Series run like they did.
With head coach Jay Johnson's first season.
Yeah. You have that, and you have so many guys returning from that. I think you learn, like, there's no bigger stage than Omaha in college baseball. And they delivered up until the very end. Mm-hmm. Like, literally the very, very end. And these were freshmen and sophomores that were doing it. So I can't even imagine the growth that this program has had and you know, the chemistry they must have built while on that trip. And it's translating right now. You know, that's the reason they're a top 10 team right now.
Well, and I went down there at the beginning of the season and talked with some of the guys. And they're keeping that momentum coming into this season. But they do recognize that it is a little bit of a different clubhouse. They lost Bobby Dalbec and a few other guys, big hitters, some good pitching. So the change in the clubhouse, making the adjustment, but it was a seamless adjustment. And having Jay Johnson kind of extremely acclimated now and just getting guys like J.J. Mijatovic and Jared Oliva and some of those new freshmen even going in early, whatever, that's helping them too.
Mm-hmm. And one note on Dalbec, he's already in the top 10 of Boston's farm system. I think that should tell you something about the development that Arizona has, that they're
MLB training ground.
Yeah, they're getting guys ready for the next level. And really, I mean, both of the Pac-12 programs in this state, MLB teams opening day, the most players from a school Arizona State. And then you have plenty of guys coming around from Arizona as well that are just instantly, you can just, you know, oh, we can skip steps 1 through 4 with them in terms of their development because they're already there.
Like, Barry Bonds was out here at ASU a couple weeks ago, and he mentioned Arizona produces great baseball players. And I mean, how can you not with the weather that we have out here? They're training year-round, and yeah, it's just amazing what both of these schools have done recently. But speaking of both of those schools, ASU is not doing hot.
Yeah, they are. They're struggling right now. Have lost 5 straight in Pac-12 play. At the bottom of the Pac-12 right now. And yeah, seems like things just can't really seem to click for them, kind of in any aspect. I know you're out there a lot, and you know this team very well. What do you attribute these struggles to?
You know, we say we use the term struggles, but I think in a way it's more so adjustments than struggles. This is a young team. 2 of their guys on the weekends are freshmen. So you got Spencer Van Soyk that's in there and Chaz Montoya. And Montoya's looked pretty good the past few outings he's had. But it's adjusting these guys to this play. And you have when you have a young team, you have to rebuild. And I think what a lot of people don't necessarily understand is they look at it as, oh, we're struggling. This is bad, this and that. But you got to rebuild. Yeah, like they came off a decent season last year. They went to TCU regional. But now they lost some guys, and they're bringing new guys in, and they have to rebuild. And I think it comes down to that. So I think it's more so we should look at it as adjustments than as struggles.
Mm-hmm. Do you see new adjustments? I'll use your term. New adjustments as Pac-12 play has started. Do you think the fact that they're playing in this pressure cooker conference that has the number one team in the nation and another top 10 just an hour and a half south? Do you think that it's a matter of adjusting to that quality of play, or have you seen these kind of cracks from the beginning of the season?
Honestly, I think I would say probably from the beginning of the season a little bit. I definitely had a little bit higher expectations coming into Pac-12 play from what I saw at the beginning of the season, but Pac-12 play compared to non-conference is very different, like you said, with the quality of play in the Pac, and a top 10 team hour and a half south. But I don't know. I mean, you've got Lyle Lynn. He's a freshman. He's doing pretty well, batting at .354. He's got 5 doubles and a home run himself, but he's got 17 RBIs as well. But I think, like, guys like him, and then you've got Gage Kanning, who's getting things going this past weekend a little bit and trying to make things happen, and Andrew Schaafs, who's had 5-game suspension at the beginning of the year, and he's really just getting rolling as well. And then you've got, like, Tyler Williams, who's coming in the DH occasionally, and he's making things happen. But it comes back to, yeah, these adjustments, but also consistency. So once the adjustment's being made, the consistency isn't being kept. So I think that Sun Devils really got to work on that consistency and just keep your head in the game with, this is Pac-12 play. It's not just any other game.
Right. And this is a good team. There's plenty of talent there.
Definitely.
Tracy Smith, I feel, is a good coach and a great recruiter. Mm-hmm. And that's half the struggle, too. It seems like half his recruiting class every year is going off to the pros.
Well, not to mention this recruiting class was ranked number one.
Right.
Coming into the season.
Right. So there's going to be a learning curve no matter what. And that's kind of the double-edged sword of guys wanting to go to the best conferences. You're automatically thrown in there. Mm-hmm. For a lot of these guys, it's probably the first time that they've ever really struggled in baseball.
Right.
So I think that it's going to be definitely a season of growth and something that, you know, maybe 2 years down the line, if these guys are sticking around, like, they'll kind of look at some of these moments and be like, that's where I kind of learned how to work or learned, mm-hmm. you know, the kind of the turning point.
Well, and we mentioned it's the freshmen, they're making adjustments. But at the same time, a lot of these Pac-12 schools do have freshmen majority on their roster. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, people may come up and say, well, USC's got all these freshmen, they're not doing as bad as ASU is. But at the same time, it's not just the coaching staff, it's the kids and mm-hmm. how they react to the change. And some of these kids are coming from Texas to a new environment here. And there's so many factors that people have to take into consideration. And mm-hmm. I think that once we do that, they'll get back on track.
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, there's a reason that so many guys have moved on to the pros, and both Pac-12 teams in the state have been perennial powers and that sort of thing. It's Andy Lopez's last year. That was a rough year, and they have those. And the next year they were in the College World Series. So baseball's a tricky game, and you know, it can click as quickly as things can fall apart.
We talk about the two Pac-12 schools in the state, but we've also got Grand Canyon University, who is doing pretty well in the WAC.
Yeah, you know, and they're being led by Jake Wong, their star pitcher, 1.38 ERA, 4-1 record, has struck out 35 in 52 innings. And, you know, you look at this lineup, and there are a lot of guys who are multi-year contributors. This seems like a veteran team. Andy Stankiewicz is the one that's leading the charge there. And you see that kind of all throughout GCU athletics right now, mm-hmm. where they have a really good guy up at the top, and they're just finding these, you know, kind of guys around the valley and in throughout the Southwest and that sort of thing that, you know, that are ready to play right away. And they're able to, much like we talked about with ASU and U of A, they're able to develop talent and, you know, get guys to the draft and that sort of thing. You know, Austin Bowles leading the way offensively, a .345 average, 9 RBIs. And, you know, you also kind of look through the offense, and it seems pretty spread out in terms of the production. It's mm-hmm. something that, you know, yeah, there are the front runners, and the, you know, Garrison Schwartz is definitely a power hitter for them, leads the team with 4 home runs and 21 RBI. But this is a team where you just have contributions coming from everywhere. They've done that with the schedule. Not only have they gone to the big schools, but they've also brought them in.
Right.
In their building, you know, on their field, that's got to do wonders for the fan base. And, you know, just continuing to not only bring in these quality programs will not only help your development, but like you said, the resume for postseason, they look at the strength of schedule. They look if you ducked out of, you know, scheduling those tough teams, and you bring in a team like Arkansas, Oklahoma State, you know, St. Mary's is a good program as well. They're about to play Arizona this week.
Time.
Yeah, like they do a very good job manipulating their schedule to their strengths.
Right, and you mentioned Oklahoma State. They won that series as well. Not only did they bring them into their home turf, but they beat them on their home turf. And they went out to Arkansas, and things didn't go so well for them there. But they went down to Arizona a couple weeks ago and put up a fight down there. So it'll be interesting to see what they can do at home. And also towards the end of the season, actually the end of April, Kansas is coming out here.
Right.
So you've got all these big name schools, these Power Five schools that are, like you said, coming out here, and they're actually putting up a fight against them.
Yeah. I think the blueprint that GCU has done is so smart. You know, we've talked about it with basketball. We've talked about it with baseball. They just get it, and they get how the NCAA works, and they've been handcuffed with being on, you know, not being able to go to the postseason. But once that's lifted, once they've gone through their probationary period, they want to hit the ground running.
Exactly. Now, moving on to another level of baseball, let's talk a little bit about the high school teams in Arizona. Jordan, what are you seeing with that?
Well, we're getting towards the end of the regular season, the start of the postseason. Like we've said before, there's so much quality talent out here, and there's so many good high school programs and guys that have already signed on to big programs and will be moving on. And in some cases, they might get drafted and skip that entire process. Mm-hmm. We saw that with Cody Bellinger just a few years ago. Right. Dylan Cousins over at Chaparral, he's already one of the top people in the Phillies farm system. So we mentioned getting ready for the next level. Like, Arizona high school baseball can also do that for you. Looking at 6A, you know, Pinnacle's definitely kind of leading the way, and they have a two-headed monster in terms of pitching. They have a very strong pitching staff, not a lot of runs get by, and that's Jason Nelson and Calvin Shapira. I hope I pronounced that correctly. But these guys, their ERAs are right around one, you know, just innings eaters, that sort of thing. And then just kind of going down the line, it's kind of a list of usual suspects with Horizon, with Basha. You know, Hamilton's in the top 10. And Hamilton, the defending state champion, they have a ton of guys going to the next level. And they also have some young contributors. That's another thing that Mike Woods has done a good job with, is kind of, you know, plugging in the holes with young guys, and they instantly contribute. And, you know, Nick Bruiser is going to Stanford next year. Drew Sharp is going to be at Arizona State, assuming these guys don't forego and, you know, decide to go to the draft, and that sort of thing. But Dustin Bermudez, sophomore pitcher, he's leading the way. ERA right around one. That's another just, you know, talent pool that you can continue to look at, and that sort of thing. And, yeah, they're just playmakers all throughout the valley and down in Tucson as well.
You mentioned all that talent in 6A. In 5A, Chaparral has Jacob Gonzalez, Casey Candiotti, and Blake Paw. And Queen Creek is doing pretty well this season. They're at 20-4.
Yeah, there's a ton of talent in multiple levels in high school, as we've said. And, you know, these playoffs are going to be really fun.
Oh, yeah.
I have a feeling. I think there's about, like, honestly, probably like 10 to 12 teams any given day, they could kind of beat up on each other on multiple divisions. So it'll be fun to see as the school year wraps up and we get into playoffs.
And obviously, this is just kind of a broad look at what we've got in Arizona high school baseball. There is a
very,
lot more talent.
Very broad. Yeah.
And we'll get to that in the coming weeks. But on the topic of guys that are being developed and are growing up in Arizona baseball, who is our AZ Big Leaguer of the Week?
Well, that would be Mr. Chris Davis of the Oakland A's. Wasn't born here, but went to Deer Valley High School. And he is having a very nice career with the A's. Great power hitter. Mm-hmm. But he's hitting for average here early in the season so far. Through 1 week, 360 batting average, 6 runs, 3 home runs, 4 RBIs. That's in 7 games. And that's in a pitcher's ballpark. That's in Oakland, you know, where fly balls go to die. So he's got some real power, and I think is one of the more underrated players in all of the league.
You know, Davis is one of those guys that's making baseball fun so far. We're not even barely brushed the surface with this season, right?
Yeah, baseball's been so fun. I love turning on the TV, and baseball that counts is on TV. The MLB Network is in. You know, they hit the ground running. It's not just them, you know, bopping around the Cactus League and Grapefruit League, even though I love their coverage. It's great. But it's great. When it's regular season, it's just a little bit different.
And it's been so exciting.
I love it so much.
That's it for this first episode of Diamonds in the Desert. Be sure to check out sports360az.com for Diamondbacks, college, and high school baseball coverage. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.